Freedominator Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
It's Feline Fury Time.
Hello, freedomizers and friends. This is Tiger Lily, show host for Tiger Lily's Freedom Roar on freedomizerradio.com. I have a very special guest today. His name is Antonio Bueller. He has been an activist in the grill of the statist cops that are violating people every single day across America. What he has done since he first became awakened back in the January 1st of 2012 is absolutely impressive. So I believe that's him on hold right now. I didn't want to delay, and so let me get him on live. Antonio, you're on.
Hello, thank you.
Wow, it's an honor to have you, Antonio. I know how busy you are. I've been following your work. You have been posting stuff to your Facebook group, about a dozen every day. I mean, every day I get on, I can't keep up with all of your messages and all of the things that you're exposing with a focus on Austin, Texas. Now, I know that Texas is quite a bit of a police state. I know that is one way that I know that is because I'm a motorcyclist and an open carrier. And I lived in Nevada, so I open carried my weapon everywhere I go when I'm on my motorcycle. Now I live in Utah, and I took a trip from Utah to Texas, and I can open carry in Utah, Arizona, New Mexico. But once I get into Texas, I have to lock it up. And I have a sense of the power shifts dramatically towards the cops when you are not allowed to open carry a firearm. But we're not here to talk about open carrying and all of that. Although it all is, you know, kind of interrelated, I want to talk about what happened to you a year ago, what you've done since, and I want to get into a little bit of philosophical dialogue with you about how this has changed, how this event changed your life. So if you wouldn't mind letting my audience know what happened to you New Year's Eve.
Sure. So on New Year, it was New Year's Day, actually, because it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. I was out with my friend Ben. We had gone to two parties, house parties, that night for New Year's Eve, and I was a designated driver so that Ben could go ahead and enjoy the night. We decided to leave the party about 1 p.m., the second party, so that we can both get home because I had an early day tomorrow and he had a lot of work to do as well. So I was driving him home, and we were running out of gas, so I pulled into a gas station on the west side of town. And when we pulled up to the gas station, there was a field sobriety test in progress. There were two cop cars that had pulled up behind a black sedan, and the female passenger was being given a field sobriety test on suspicion of DUI. There was no reason for us to do anything other than watch, you know, just like anyone would. We watched the encounter as we were filling up with gas. And there was a female passenger in the car, and she was, from what we could see, wasn't doing anything. She was just talking on the phone. All of a sudden, the cop behind the car comes up and leans in to the passenger, to the driver's side, says something to her, goes back. And then a little bit later, the other cop goes up and starts talking to her. And at that time, we were about getting ready to leave, so we were just wrapping up. We were putting the gas pump back up, and we were about to leave. The cop who walked up to the side of the car, his name was Robert Snyder, decides to open the door, which I thought was awkward, but I didn't see any reason to stay. So we're getting ready to leave, and then all of a sudden we hear this violent scream, and this woman is screaming in pain. And we turn around, and we see Robert Snyder ripping her from the car, throwing her to the ground. At that point, the other cop, Patrick Oborski, comes running over and assists in the abuse of this woman. And both my friend Ben and I take out our cameras, our phones. Unfortunately, I had a really bad BlackBerry, and he had a very old iPhone. And so we were only able to take a couple pictures. But she saw us taking pictures, and then she screamed out and begged us to please record what was happening because she was clearly getting assaulted. At that point, I started yelling at the cops, telling them to stop hurting her, and stop abusing her and to let her go. She hadn't done anything wrong. And they ignored me. They picked her up, cuffed her, walked her back towards the back squad car. And then Patrick Oborski, halfway back, turns around and comes towards me. And he gets in my face and he starts yelling, you know, who do you think you are? I'm saying, it doesn't matter who I am. I'm allowed to videotape. And then he starts pushing me in the chest. And I immediately throw up my arms. I say, why are you touching me? You're not allowed to touch me. Get out of my face. And he pushes me into the back of the truck that I was driving and is leaning in. And if you look at the YouTube video, you can see just how aggressive he's being. And I have my hands up the entire time telling him that I didn't do anything wrong. Get out of my face. You're not allowed to touch me. And then he giggles at some point, and then he says, you just spit in my face, you're under arrest. And then they wrestled me to the ground, and I didn't realize at the time, but I was going to be charged with a felony crime of spitting in a cop's face. Of course, they did try to set me up with a drunk driving charge as well. They had me go through the breathalyzer experience, even though I wasn't pulled over. I certainly wasn't under suspicion of drinking and driving. But after I blew what was most likely a 0.00, they said that I broke the breathalyzer. And at that point, I was charged with felony harassment of a public official, which carries 2 to 10 years.
That is outrageous. And if it wasn't for some evidence that you were able to locate afterwards, tell me about what happened next. You went to jail, and you spent how long did you spend in jail, and what was going through your mind at the time? And before I go further, let me just I should have introduced you better. Tell us what your credentials are. I mean, when at first glance you I can just imagine a cop sees you and you're kind of in his grill, and these cops are not used to being told what to do. They're used to taking control, and anybody who dares either contradict them or just even question them or not obey them like the slaves that they think that we are, they get their feathers up in a ruffle, and they have the power because they have the gun and all of the resources of statism to back them up, to squash somebody like you who was trying to rescue a woman from these sadistic, tyrannical a-holes. So when they see you and you've got long hair, and to me you look like Fabio, you're tall, dark, handsome with the long hair, but this guy, these cops must have thought that you were just an ordinary, you know, person that they can get away with beating up or with violating. They had no idea what your credentials are. Please tell my audience about you, about your background.
Right, and I just want to preface this by saying that I think that we're all individuals and everyone should have the exact same natural rights, and that your background shouldn't be what determines whether or not you should have your rights protected. Unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect society. So I graduated from West Point, the United States Military Academy, and I served 5 years in the military, including tours in Kosovo and Iraq. While I was in the military, I became Airborne Ranger qualified. I was a captain when I was in Iraq. I was the logistics officer of the largest brigade in the largest division in Iraq that first year, and I got to do some really great work to solve a lot of pretty serious supply issues, shortages that first year. I was awarded a Bronze Star for my time there. And then I got out, and I went to Stanford University to get my Master's of Business Administration. And after that, I went to New York. I worked in finance. I ended up opening up my own private equity shop, a microcap focused on buying a company. And then I decided to become an entrepreneur and become an advocate for the homeschooling movement. I launched Beeler Education. And the entire time since I was in high school, I've been involved in numerous children's sort of efforts, whether it was coaching, mentoring, being on boards of nonprofits, helping kids with admissions into colleges. And so that really encompassed a large part of my life. And then I've been a part-time teacher as well here in Austin. So given all that, and the fact that I'm not Black or Hispanic, and the fact that I don't have any sort of background as far as trouble with the law, from just a resume perspective, a lot of people would say he's sort of the all-American guy and he can do no wrong type person. And so when I was in prison that night, I was really worried because I thought that my life had been turned upside down, and I thought that these cops, clearly they had no problem lying about what I did that night, and they were clearly interested in harming me. And so I was seriously concerned about spending a portion of my life behind bars. So when I got out, my friend Ben told me, hey, there were witnesses. I was like, thank God. And I said, well, who are they? And he said, well, I don't know. The cops didn't let me talk to them. They prevented them from talking to me. And so we went out and started trying to find who they were by posting flyers around town, going to Twitter, Facebook, and Craigslist. And fortunately, a bunch of witnesses stepped forward. Three in particular that were really, really high, very valuable witnesses. Two that were in the parking lot who said that they saw the entire thing, and the cops lied about everything. And one guy across the street who said the same thing, and then also provided a YouTube a video that he posted on YouTube, which proves that the cops were lying. And then that sort of changed the dynamic for us a lot. But because of my background and because of the video and the witnesses that stepped forward, the media was able to pick up on it. And people who normally make excuses for the cops were able to say, okay, well, this is clearly in the wrong. And I was able to get a lot of support. Unfortunately, the reality is most people don't have a bunch of witnesses and they don't have video and they don't have the background that allows people to trust their word over the word of a cop.
Yes, for some reason, when cops speak, it's as though Moses himself is making declarations, and we tend not to question them. I'm glad you prefaced that whole thing with the importance of recognizing natural rights, because that's something that I learned the hard way. I was a motorcycle I used to work for a motorcycle magazine, so I would, you know, go around to motorcycle clubs, and over and over I'd hear these motorcyclists complain about how vicious the cops were. And in my own mind, in my own world, I was a registered nurse, and, you know, I had your typical, you know, beaver cleaver kind of a life, and I thought that cops were here to serve and protect and everything. So in my own mind, I thought, well, brush your hair, brush your teeth, and drop the attitude so that the cops don't target you. And it wasn't until I had my own encounter with a police officer as a part of an investigative report that I did that turned my entire life upside down. It's like this is not the America that I thought that I was living in. And then as I started delving into the statism and the fact that we have more people in prison in the United States per capita than any other nation on the planet, and why isn't the media exposing this sort of thing? So I'm glad you prefaced that whole thing with it doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter that you're a West Point graduate. It doesn't matter that I, you know, raised children and was a nurse and was a quote-unquote law-abiding citizen. None of that matters. What matters is that you've got a human being that's being violated, that has the potential to be murdered by statism in America as we know it, and the cops will not only get away with it in 9 times out of 10 or even more, but they will get paid time off when it's something so egregious as murders. And you as an awakened person are seeing this all across the country. So let me ask you this. Once you were in jail and you thought that you your life was changed, And you got your video. Somebody came forward and did, you know, found a video. And were you immediately exonerated?
No, I wasn't immediately exonerated. In fact, the Austin Police Department doubled down. The police chief came out and said that he backed up his officers. The police officers union came out and they started making excuses for the officers. The public affairs office started making up lies, suggesting that I did stuff that I didn't do. And they, when presented with overwhelming evidence, they did not do the right thing and say, okay, our officers clearly lied and perhaps we overlooked it and now we're going to rectify the situation. They decided to go out even harder to try to punish me and the other victims that night. In fact, the female who was assaulted, she came out and told her story to the media. And after she told her story to the media, they issued a new warrant for her arrest. They initially arrested her for public intoxication. They said that she was drunk and a danger to herself and the public because she was sitting in the passenger seat of a car being driven home while she was on the phone with someone who was willing to come pick her up, a sober person who was willing to pick her up. The real reason that they arrested her was because she told her friend that her friend did not have to submit to a field sobriety test nor a breathalyzer, and for telling her friend her right, which is completely legal, she didn't break any laws that night, they assaulted her, and to cover up the assault, they charged her with public intoxication. Well, after she told her story to the media, they came back, issued a warrant for her arrest to charge her additionally with resisting arrest and disobeying a public official. Like, these people are corrupt, and they are willing to destroy the lives of peaceful people who have never hurt anyone in order to cover up the crimes of two violent cops who are on video and where numerous witnesses identified them as aggressive felons. But unfortunately, you know, that's the way the system works, and these guys just keep digging their heels more and more, and the charges against all three of us are still sitting out there. And in fact, my case hasn't even gone to grand jury yet. There's rumors that it will go to grand jury here this month, but we've heard those rumors before.
Another thing that I've noticed, and I've been very, very, eagle-eyed about this, is the way the media reports information. I have somebody that I've been in contact with. Her name is Teresa Smith. You may even know of her. Her son was murdered by Anaheim cops, and they not only got away with it, but recently it was deemed justified. And the way the media did this, shared the information, was they go to the cops, and of course the information is going to be controlled by the cops. So instead of, as we were talking about people having natural rights, instead of the media doing their job and stating that a person by the name of so-and-so was gunned down by an unmarked car at Walmart, the headline was ex-parolee shot by cops. Now, that totally influences the mind of people who are like what I used to be like, whereas, oh, okay, well, it's an ex-parolee, so it's not like it's somebody upstanding. But the reality is this person was a parolee because of the war on drugs. There was he was in there for a nonviolent so-called crime to start with, and he pled down, you know, to something that involved a weapon, and there was no weapon involved. So it's like this whole thing of pleading down is just it boggles my mind. And then the way the media is in bed with these police officers to get their agenda out and their message out without the same amount of discernment towards the victim. So it's almost as though they're blaming the victim. Now, and I say this because I've been following some of the news reports in your case, and you have since been arrested two more times. Is that correct? Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, well, I agree completely about the media. The media is pathetic, usually, in large part. In my case, there were a couple reporters that really took up the cause, and they said, you know what, this is a legitimate story, there's plenty of evidence, and they went out and told the truth. One of the people who went out and did a great job of just exposing, of not only telling the truth, but exposing the lies of the cops, he highlighted the contradictions of the cops and how they were lying. He was actually pulled off the story, and he was told that he couldn't do the story anymore. Another local station was they were doing their job presenting the story at the beginning,
But then they started to try to suggest that we were a violent group and that we had people supporting us who espouse violence against police, and they were trying to, like, you know, catch me, like, well, why have you not rebuked this person who said this thing? I was like, you know, people I've never met before, not even in the state of Texas. And so it's pretty clear that the media is completely on the side of the cops, and there's a big reason for that, because without the support of the cops, they're not going to get the leads on stories that they like to get, because they like to provide this information because people want to hear it. You know, there's a lot of one of the reporters on one of the stories I had who essentially tried to slam me, we found out later was the wife of a cop, an Austin police officer. So there was serious conflict of interest there. And the city of Austin gives out a ton of money to these media organizations, something that a local activist here in Austin, Clay Defoe, has pointed out on record. They essentially buy off the media. So that's a huge, huge problem. And I just wanted to address that point. And I actually forgot the question that you were asking.
You have since been arrested, what, two more times?
Right, that's correct. So I've since been arrested twice more, both for filming cops. So what we've done through the Peaceful Streets, the grassroots organization that had been launched after my arrest to combat police violence and corruption, one of the things that we do is we go out cop watching. And I've been arrested twice more for simply filming the cops supposedly doing their duty. Each time they've arrested me for interference with public duties, they've also interfered. Someone who was filming me filmed them. They arrested her with interference with public duties. They also arrested one of us under the guise of failure to ID, even though he wasn't suspected of a crime, which is a requirement to ID oneself. And they arrested another person who was filming the cops for criminal trespass, because instead of standing on a curb, he had one foot in the gutter, and they said the gutter was on private property, so they arrested him as well.
But do they own the private property, these cops?
No, it was actually, he was there to observe some direct action from folks from Occupy Austin who were trying to set up like a tent city type situation in a private parking lot from an owner who actually said that they were allowed to be there. but because it was private property and because the Austin Police Department was just trying to exert their muscle, they pushed everyone off the property. And this guy was just there to record and videotape the cops. And he had one foot that was in the gutter, you know, as opposed to being completely on the sidewalk, and so they decided to use that as an opportunity to arrest him as well. So they've arrested total five people for simply recording cops.
Wow. I listened to, it was in March, that you were interviewed by Stéphane Molyneux. He is my favorite philosopher in the whole world. He's somebody that I listen to a lot and for whom I have a great deal of respect. I was very surprised that I hadn't, you know, known, I didn't know that he had interviewed you. And I saw the whole interview on YouTube. And one of the things that I found really interesting is back then you mentioned that what you suspected Austin police was going to do is kind of drag this out as long as they can, so that you know, the hype kind of goes down and then they can stick it to you later on. And I was thinking how brilliant of you to continue to keep the story alive, even if it's through arrest. That you're doing now with your Peaceful Streets project, videotaping and recording cops to make them accountable. I think it's a brilliant strategy to keep your story alive. And but do you see that there could be any possibility that this could backfire? Because I was looking at a couple of the news coverages, and they're almost the reporters are almost blaming you that you need to get out of their face. What do you think?
Yeah, well, first off, it's not part of my strategy to get arrested. I had no intentions of being arrested. I wasn't doing anything illegal. I wasn't doing anything aggressive either time that I was arrested. And in fact, the second time I was arrested, I spent the entire time, the entire interaction with the cop, walking backwards, walking away, asking him how far I needed to move back to be sufficient. And then he finally said, well, you have two options. You can walk over there, which would have required me walking towards the cop and the suspect, which is just a moronic option, or leave. And I said, fine, I'm leaving. And at that point, he arrested me. So getting arrested has not been, it has never been an interest of mine. It's just something that the police department has been doing, you know, in a way to punish me for videotaping and to punish other people, particularly individuals named Lynn, Sarah, and Joshua, who have just been great advocates and activists trying to expose police abuse as well. But, you know, I have been trying to keep this, you know, in the public's eye for the purpose of trying to get people to break away from the notion that cops aren't inherently a force for good or something that we need here in society, or to try to break down this notion that we need to support and defend our cops even when they commit violent crimes and even when they're destroying people's lives. You know, we're trying to create a culture change where people will stand up and protect and serve one another, and they will oppose violence no matter where it comes from, to include from the police force. So that's why we've been continuing to push forward and keep trying to make it an issue. And that's why we had the Police Accountability Conference. That's why we do our cop watches, our Know Your Rights training, all these things we do, because we know that there are probably on a day-to-day basis here in this country hundreds, if not thousands of people who are wrongfully arrested, thrown in jail, and have their lives upturned because of crooked criminal cops and a corrupt system.
Yes, there's hundreds being killed, let alone, and every day somebody's being violated somewhere, probably every minute. It's just, it's an absolute, it's a crisis. It's a national crisis. I have a good friend by the name of Bill Buford who runs ZeroGov. He's the founder of ZeroGov.com, and he's ex-military as well, and his position is cops are the only reason politicians can take away our liberties. So, you know, I just wanted to clarify, I didn't think that you were deliberately getting yourself arrested, but you are in their grill and making them accountable, and you're stirring up that hornet's nest. So you're kind of putting yourself out there, and that's a very dangerous place to be, especially you not being armed because you're not allowed to in Texas. I don't know if you're a concealed carrier or whatever. The point is that one wrong move and they will murder you. This is very, very dangerous what you and your colleagues are doing, and it's something that needs to be done. And I hope you have tons and tons of videotaping. And the other point I wanted to make was live streaming. Have you done any live streaming while you do your activism?
Yeah, we weren't doing live streaming at first, but after my second arrest, it became pretty clear that we needed to live stream because they were actually confiscating our cameras. They've stolen four cameras from us, and it's always been through arrest. And so when they arrest us, when they illegally arrest us, they take the evidence, which proves our innocence. And then the media comes out and they give their terrible reporting piece where they suggest that we were doing stuff that was aggressive and that we were interfering with the police. And lo and behold, the only evidence which proves that they're lying is evidence that they've stolen from us. So they have four of our cameras with the videos which prove that they were lying. And we know that we'll get them back someday, but we have absolutely zero expectation that those videos will still be on there. We assume that the cops are going to have deleted them because the cops are corrupt. But when we do get those videos back, we're going to turn them right over to the media and let the media be the first ones to look at the videos, because we want them to know that if there was video on there, it was erased by the cops, not by us. Regarding the protecting oneself, by virtue of being charged with a felony, I lost my Second Amendment rights. So I did go through the process of getting my concealed handgun license, and because I've been accused of a felony, not even indicted, much less tried or convicted, I have lost my Second Amendment rights, and I cannot carry anymore. And it's something I'm very upset about. And the cops know that they were in the wrong. They know that they committed the crimes, and I'm an innocent person. But because they keep drawing this out, I have now spent the last 12 months unable to exercise my Second Amendment rights because of corrupt cops and the corrupt people who back them up.
Oh, my God. Do you have a good lawyer, and how is your defense fund coming along, and how can my listeners help to your donate to your defense fund?
Well, my defense fund is good. We had – there's a local activist here in Austin named Pam Farley who's been amazing. She was a huge, huge Ron Paul supporter. That's how I got to know her originally. And when this happened, she just came out full force and tried to help me out, as have so many other activists. But she set up a legal defense fund, and we raised money. And I had a lawyer step forward, Joe James Sawyer, who's very well regarded here in Austin, who decided to take my case on pro bono. And the donations that have come in were enough to cover all the legal fees of the other two victims that night. So from a legal defense fund, we're good to go. But I would greatly appreciate if people would consider donating to the Peaceful Streets Project, as we are fighting for innocent people, to protect people from police abuse and violence. And we have three chip-ins going on right now. One is for general marketing, the general efforts of Peaceful Streets. One is for Lynn Foster's defense fund, because he has to pay out of pocket for his illegal arrest by the police just because he was filming. And we also have one to set up a billboard in Austin to expose Patrick Oborski and Robert Snyder, the two criminal cops who assaulted two peaceful people and filed false charges against us on New Year's Day. So peacefulstreets.com/donate is a way that they can contribute to any one of those three causes. And the billboard and the legal defense fund, that money, the only money that will go towards them is the money that gets into those two chip-ins, and any excess money from that will be pushed back over to the general fund.
Awesome. That's peacefulstreets.com/donate.
That's right.
Awesome. I hope you get some. Yeah. Now, is Peaceful Streets, I know it originated out there in Austin. Has it grown? Has it gone? I know there's a town there where there was a cop nearby where you're at who was like in the grill saying, yeah, take my picture, I don't care. And he did something naughty. Hearst, Texas. Is Peaceful Streets Project out there? Or?
Well, Peaceful Streets Project can be anywhere. And if anyone wants to start a Peaceful Streets Project, that'd be great. We are an organization that is decentralized. We are very flat. We aren't. No one's getting paid. There's not a single person that makes any sort of personal, no one receives personal benefit. No one's getting, better off financially because of their work with the project. Everything's completely voluntary. But if people want to start a Peaceful Streets Project, all they really have to agree to is to be nonviolent. So we never advocate violence. Violence is against our core message. We are trying to create peace, not violence. We are nonpartisan, so we don't take political sides. We don't push legislation. We don't support legislators or politicians in any way. We are focused on direct action, actually trying to have an impact on people's lives directly, exposing criminal cops, encouraging people to stand up for one another, teaching them their rights, and enabling them with the technologies necessary to record pleas. So if they can do that and just remain within a couple very broad guidelines, anyone can start Peaceful Streets. And this is a movement that we would love to see just grow and percolate the entire nation. And we have Peaceful Streets chapters that have already launched in Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, Fort Worth, Manchester, New Hampshire. Some of the free staters up there have launched it. We're in talks with people in Pueblo, Colorado, and Albuquerque, New Mexico, who are essentially there. They just haven't formally said that they're Peaceful Streets. And we work in conjunction with CopLock.org. And CopLock.org is an awesome organization that's been around for a while, where they go out and actively try to not interfere, but let people know what their rights are when they're interacting with police and prevent them from getting arrested. And so we've used some of the similar tactics that they've used, and that's another organization that people can go check out as well if they want to go ahead and fight police abuse. But they have a huge network as well, and then there's the cop watches that have been around for a long time as well. So in a lot of the large communities in this country, there are people out there, and we are trying to grow that movement, and we would like it to be a situation where there are more watchers in any given city than there are police. In Austin, Texas, we have 1,600 cops just in the Austin Police Department. That doesn't include the other law enforcement agencies that are also in this town as the capital of Texas. And so if we could have more people out there watching the cops and observing and being ready to film the police than there are cops out there, then we will have a much safer community. And we'd like to see that happen everywhere in this country.
That would be awesome. When I had my awakening and I recognized, you know, when I used to see a cop handcuff somebody, I thought, oh, that's our men are brave men. Thank goodness they're cleaning up the streets from drugs or crime or what have you. But after I had my incident, I look now at the person in handcuffs as the victim. And when I saw it was a year ago or so, I saw a man being handcuffed, and you know, I was by my house and stuff, and I decided, well, I'm gonna walk my dog because he's been there like for an hour already, and I walked my dog. I was open carrying, and I had my flip camera that I invested $50 in a flip camera, and then I pulled it out and I started videotaping, because what I realized is there was a little girl in the suspect's car. It was a dad who had just picked up a little girl, and from school, and I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here? So you know, I was at a safe distance, and these cops came at me, and they handcuffed me for 56 minutes because they can up to an hour. They let me go, but what they, I kind of freaked them out a little bit with what I told them, and I won't say over the air, but it scared them so badly that they told me, okay, instead of, because they tried to order me to sit on the ground, they said, just stand back against the wall. So I stood back against the wall, and they forgot I had my camera in my hand still. So I turned it back on, and I got a lot of really juicy, raw data. And one of the things that came of that is I'm involved with an organization called Guerrilla Lawfare, and what we advocate is very similar to what you advocate, which is absolutely peaceful type stuff, but video recording. So what the founder of this organization did, and is something you might consider if you haven't already done so, is he calls them Guerrilla Lawfare Alerts. By using Google.com or whatever, you can actually, if you see somebody that's being pulled over or something, you can mobilize people to show up with video cameras to hold these guys accountable. Just stay at a safe distance, because they're trigger happy in Las Vegas, as you know, and stay at a safe distance and videotape. And people, the suspects need to, sometimes they're confused about what's going on. They think that when they see a camera, they're embarrassed. They're embarrassed that, you know, they got pulled over for a DUI or for whatever, or speeding or whatever. They feel ashamed, you know, and it's almost as though, please don't videotape me. But what people need to recognize, and I like that you have your red shirts for your peaceful projects, because that identifies you as on their side, that you're there to protect the citizens, at not to protect the cops. The cops have plenty of protection. So have you thought about doing something like that, where you mobilize people with some kind of peaceful street alerts?
Well, we actually have that. So in Austin, we have the Lone Star Liberty Bell, which is something that John Bush, one of the lead organizers of Peaceful Streets and a very long-time activist here in Austin, set up, where you call into this number, 512-34-UNITE, if you're in Austin, and you go ahead and report police activity, and then the people who can will then immediately mobilize and try to move to that location. It's something also that some of the Mexican-Americans used back in the 80s here in Austin when they were the targets of a lot of police abuse, and they had something very similar, and they were able to protect people from getting arrested and abused as well through that. But speaking of, well, and then I also wanted to just point out that I know Las Vegas is terrible. I know the story of Eric Scott, another West Pointer who was gunned down by police. His father, Bill Scott, has been fighting a very hard fight against the Las Vegas Police Department. Unfortunately, I think that the Las Vegas Police Department is a lot more powerful and a lot more corrupt than the Austin Police Department. So winning that fight is even more difficult than I think the fight is, and that the fight will be in Austin. But you talked about how cops are not necessarily honorable and brave. And I think that that's absolutely true. And a lot of people like to use the generalization that cops are heroes. And I think that while no generalization is accurate, that generalization is certainly not accurate. And a far more accurate generalization is cops are cowards. Cops are cowards. Yep. Cops are the only people in society that have permission to go around killing unarmed people preemptively because they're scared of them, because of officer safety. No other profession in our nation, including our soldiers that fight overseas, are allowed to go around killing civilians because they're scared of them. No other profession in this country kills as many dogs on a daily basis because they're afraid of the dogs. We have postmen who go to houses every single day and get bit by cops all the time. We don't go around shooting dogs. The cops in this country are cowards. They shoot people who are innocent because they're afraid of them, or at least they say that. They shoot dogs that are innocent because they are afraid of them all the time. It's disgusting. And very few cops actually fight real crime, because very few cops are willing to go out after the criminal cops who are destroying people's lives. So I want to stop hearing the refrain that cops are heroes, and I want to hear the refrain from most people in society that cops are cowards.
Very good. I'm here. I'm totally with you on that. Because, and that's what I tell people, because I love it when people say, oh, it's not all of them, it's just a small percentage. No, it's the big percentage, and the small percentage who may have some sense of virtue in them are too cowardly to come forward and expose the corruption that they're a part of. And thank you for giving voice to that very important thing. I wanted to change our direction a little bit towards philosophy and how it is that you met Stefan Molyneux. How has your awakening from Christmas Day changed your perception of the Constitution, morality, religion? How has it changed your perspective?
Well, nothing's changed since New Year's Day. I just hadn't actively taken on police abuse as an issue because I never felt harmed by it. So I sort of woke up back in 2009 when I started listening to Ron Paul videos, and I delved into more and more Ayn Rand reading, and I started reading more about libertarianism, and that led me to move to Austin, Texas, which is, you know, a hotbed of libertarian, anarchist, liberty type people and sort of initiatives. And so I was drawn to Austin because I knew I could be around a lot of like-minded people. And so I already accepted that liberty was the ideal that I wanted to strive for, and that I wanted to help other people be free. And so I had been involved in various efforts to support other people. I got engaged in the Ron Paul movement. I was supporting some things that had to do with police corruption, such as the Innocence Project. I'm a big supporter of them. They try to exonerate innocent people who are sitting in prison. And while not everything that I did was philosophically pure, it was always to try to push for more liberty and to try to go down that path. When I got arrested on New Year's Day, that sort of just opened my eyes up to the huge other arena where people are getting victimized on a day-to-day basis. So my previous focus had been on the wars abroad and how we are, you know, our foreign policy is killing countless numbers of civilians for no good reason, and how that's just so antithetical to any sort of notion of liberty. And, you know, anyone who thinks that we're over there spreading freedom and democracy are just, they're just not, you know, tuned in. But once I got arrested and my story came out, all these people started coming to me, telling me their story of abuse, how they were victimized. And not a single person who came forward and told me their personal story said, I want to sue and make money off of this, or I want to be on TV. Everyone said, I support you. I don't want to see what happened to me happen to you, and that's why I'm telling you my story. And so that's when I realized that there were just, you know, millions of people in this country who've been victimized by the police, and that's where I could put forth my best effort right now, given my platform.
Awesome. And the final question, because I didn't go to commercial break, so we'll have to end a little bit early, but my final question for you is, you mentioned on the Stephane Molyneux show that you were surprised at some of the reactions of some of your friends and family. And I'd like you to address some of that, because I'm fortunate in that, fortunate and unfortunate, and I loved my parents, but they're both dead. And my children are grown, and my husband supports my efforts. But ever since I became an activist, I've lost a lot of friends. They don't understand when, you know, they can't comprehend how it is that I could go from a quote unquote law abiding, cop supporting person to somebody who wants to get rid of all and supports a voluntary type of a society. Can you, what has your experiences with your friends and family, without, you know, disclosing any names or anything like that, what has been your experience?
Yeah, so when I became an activist, when I started getting involved primarily through anti-war, Ron Paul, and homeschooling, I had people who distanced themselves from me, especially people who really benefited from the establishment, whether it was teachers or whether it was people who worked in investment banking or had ties to Democratic or Republican parties. You know, those people started distancing themselves from me. But I didn't have any sort of a wholesale abandonment, you know, from friends and family. But when I decided to take the cause of police abuse and make it personal and really take that up and put it in people's faces and try to expose the crimes that happen every day to peaceful people, even though I was a victim of police abuse and everyone knew that, I was shocked at how I did lose friends and how even people in my own family abandoned me. And it was a very, very painful thing to go through when you're fighting as hard as you can to make sure that you stay free, to have people who you thought were on your side abandon you and ridicule you because you have the audacity to call out cops. I thought it was horrible. And in my situation, I was just so blessed because, one, I'm here in Austin, Texas, which is the hotbed of liberty in this country, other than perhaps the Free State Project in New Hampshire. So that was one thing. And the other thing was, just hold on one second. Okay, yeah, so I was here, I was in Austin, Texas. I had just a ton of people who could support me, and that was just very, very important to me. And then I had people who came out of the woodwork who didn't know me previously because of what happened to me, and they ended up showing me a lot more support. And, you know, a lot of those people became the friends and family that I possibly did not have previously that I thought I had. So in a weird way, I'm better off because of it all. I was very disappointed by the people who let me down, but in the end, it really exposed sort of people who were just, you know, fair weather friends, and it brought into my life a lot of people who are just really, really amazing. And now I feel like I really do have a community, and there may be less people that support me now, but the people who do support me are just, you know, a lot more impactful and meaningful. So in that way, I feel fortunate.
So you lost quantity but acquired quality.
Absolutely. And the people that I've acquired, and of course, there are people who have good moral grounding who happen to support, immoral institutions, you know, who may support the police or may support, you know, certain political parties, you know, or issues that, you know, are not freedom oriented or liberty oriented, but they understand that there is a difference between wrong and right, and, you know, they're willing to support me even though they happen to be, say, a member of the Republican or Democratic Party, you know, but they see this as a problem. But, you know, there's just, in my life now, there are just so many people who are just completely aligned with me philosophically, people who just understand that violence is always a bad option in trying to shape society or get people to change their opinion and or try to make someone, you know, better off financially. And by being surrounded by those people who are just, I feel, you know, morally good people and, you know, believe that violence is wrong and believe that freedom and liberty is the state that we should all achieve, you know, aspire to be a part of, you know, I just feel so lucky. So in a very backward way, what happened to me on New Year's Day was one of the best things that ever happened to me. I lost a ton of money. I lost friends and family. You know, I had to spend a lot of time fighting this thing. I lost money through it. But unlike most people who are victimized by the state and by the police, you know, I think that I have come out ahead, whereas most people are just victims. So I can't sit here and cry. I'm very fortunate. And the best that I can do is try to help protect other people.
I think that's awesome. And I also liked what you said about how you are so grateful that somebody came out of the woodworks with video to exonerate you, that you're passing it forward, and that's what you do for others.
Yeah, and that guy, he's an amazing, remarkable guy. That guy did not have to take video. He did not have to come forward with his story. He did not have to put the video online. You know, and this guy did all this stuff, and he doesn't even want to be known. And I said, can I share your name with the media? You know, can I let people know what an amazing person you are? He's like, no. I don't want anyone to know who I am. And, I mean, it's just remarkable. This guy is a true hero. You know, everyone talks about, like, oh, Antonio Beeler, like, what you did was so heroic and all that stuff. This guy, without this guy, no one would even know what I did, right? And I would be facing really, really dire consequences. This guy is a real hero, and no one even knows who he is. And that's just, I mean, like, this guy, and there's two other people who stepped forward immediately with, you know, and shared their stories, Elizabeth Mahoney and Carlos Amador, both complete strangers. I didn't know who they were before that night. But they stepped forward and stood up for someone, you know, who they saw being victimized. So, yeah, I stood up for the female that was being victimized, and then they stood up for me. And hopefully we live in a society someday in the near future where everyone will stand up for everyone else, and then we won't have a need for police as if we have a need for them today. But we won't have no one will think we have a need for police, and we'll be able to really crack down on these criminal agents that walk around with badges and guns and destroy people's lives.
Right. Antonio, you are an awesome interview, and it's been an honor that you gave me some of your time, because I know how busy you are and what an activist you are. You're my hero. I can't imagine how much you've accomplished in such a short period of time from New Year's Day to raise awareness and to bring communities together and to do so in such a nonviolent way and in such a productive way. And next time that I have you on, if you would grace me with another interview sometime, I would like to delve more into your homeschooling project, because I think that at the root of statism and the problem with statism is the violence that our children are being exposed to. And it starts sometimes at home with us spanking our children, and we're sending our children into these violent indoctrination camps where now there's cops in school. They're with full belts and violating children, and they're our most precious resource, and we need to stop giving lip service to that and recognize that if we decide to bring somebody into the world, we have a responsibility to protect them from the evils of statism. So thank you for your work. Thank you for coming on my show. And do you have any final thoughts? And please plug your website again.
Yeah, no, I just, I encourage people to stand up and do something. There's so many people out there who know that there's evil things going on, and it's great to be a supporter and to support those who are actually out there fighting a fight, but it's even better if they can get involved and become engaged in any way they can, whether it's donating or getting out on the street and doing direct activism or supporting people who are doing so in other ways. But in particular with Peaceful Streets, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/peacefulstreets. You can go to our website, peacefulstreets.com, and you can go to peacefulstreets.com/donate to support us in these in the fundraising right now, which we're really trying to get this billboard put up before I go to grand jury and before the one-year anniversary of the attack on me and this other woman. And you can always follow me on Facebook or Twitter at Antonio Beeler. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Antonio. And when is your grand jury?
They refuse to tell me, but rumor has it it's going to be on or about December 17th.
Ah, right around the holidays, huh?
Yes, that way people are tuned out. No one's paying attention to the news. That way it can happen, and then they can still sit there and pretend that their cops are honorable and that they've done nothing wrong.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you so much once again, and let's keep in touch, all right?
All right. Thank you.
Have a great one.
You too. Bye.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.